Brad, he's joining us in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair, running for governor, seeking the Republican Party gubernatorial nomination, former U.S. Comptroller General. And by the way, he will take phone calls at 888-574-2723. With us until 8:30 this morning, David Walker. David, welcome back to Brad and Dan.
Great to be back, to be with both of you in the first radio channel in Connecticut and the talk of Connecticut.
That's right. We're the first, yeah, the first station in Connecticut here.
I'm going to have to check out this MyPillow. He's giving a pretty good endorsement.
You're going to need it during this campaign to get a good night's sleep. How's the campaign going, by the way?
It's going fantastic. We've raised over $260,000 in contributions of no more than $100 per person. We're still raising in order to be able to get the cushion that the State Election Enforcement Commission wants, and in order to be able to have enough money to do what we think we need to do between now and the convention. But there's no question we're going to qualify for voluntary public financing. The debates start next week. I love debates. Debates are going to end up separating the wheat from the chaff. We've got a lot of people running, some of whom are qualified, some of whom aren't. But I'm looking forward to that.
But your background, too. I mean, you worked with my favorite president, Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan. Yeah, and we have actually a lot in common. You know, I wouldn't compare myself directly to Ronald Reagan. He was a great president. But, you know, he started out as a Democrat. And I was one for 3.5 years when I was young, when I was first registered to vote. He was a Democrat a lot longer than I was. Okay.
That's right.
Secondly, he was not born in California, where he was elected governor. Thirdly, the first office that he ran, that he was elected to, was governor. All right. He did a great job as governor. He was not a politician. And he also did a great job as president. And, you know, he's somebody I look to as a model as to what we need to do to turn around Connecticut.
Well, what do we need to do to turn around Connecticut?
The first thing we have to do is we have to stop the exodus of both individuals and businesses out of the state. The second thing that we need to do is that we need to put our finances in order, because they're in terrible shape, all right? And thirdly, we have to sell Connecticut. We've got a lot to sell. Now, that involves a lot of things. That involves much more intelligent economic development. It involves creating a partnership between government and business rather than an adversarial relationship. It involves regulatory relief. It involves tax reform. It involves comprehensive reform of the state employee compensation and benefit programs, welfare reform, infrastructure investment. I'm putting together a comprehensive and integrated fiscal framework that will be very specific about the kinds of things that we need to do in order to create a better future in Connecticut. Politicians either A, won't do it, or B, don't know how to do it.
When you say it requires a better relationship between government and business, unions automatically get nervous when they hear that statement. Lori Pelletier, the head of the Connecticut AFL-CIO, is already out there criticizing some of the Republican Party candidates. Well, what can you say to unions to placate them or try to say that's not the message?
Well, first, you can't be pro-job and anti-business, because business creates the jobs. I'm not anti-union. Both of my grandfathers were in a union. My dad's dad was actually president of the largest United Mine Workers local in the country at one time. My mother's dad was a steel worker. Andy Stern, who used to be the head of SEIU, was on my board of the Comeback America initiative. I'm not anti-union at all, but I'm pro-taxpayer. And the fact of the matter is that there has been collusion between career politicians and state public employee union leaders for the last 30 years to create an arrangement that is unreasonable, unaffordable, unsustainable, and unfunded. I'm talking about the retirement benefits. We have to restructure that. If you don't restructure that in an equitable and sustainable way, we cannot do what needs to be done to turn around Connecticut. And I'm uniquely qualified to do that.
You know, when you take a look at Connecticut now, it just seems every year it gets worse and worse and worse. And everybody says, well, we're going to do this. But then there is a group that does not allow it to be done. And those are the things that many people are worried about.
Well, Brad, you're exactly right. I mean, the truth is that the legislature in this state is run by the public sector unions. When you have a Speaker of the House of Representatives that is a paid public sector union leader whose duty of loyalty is to the union members rather than to taxpayers of the state, you got a problem. And one of the things that I talk about in my platform, it's not just the what do we need to do to stimulate economic growth, put our finances in order. It's what do we need to do to get rid of convicts and conflicts in government. You know, our nickname in Connecticut is Corrupticut, and it's well-earned. And we've got to have much tougher conflict of interest rules, and we should not allow people who are convicted felons for public corruption to run for office. I mean, we're one of only four states that do that. It makes no sense.
Well, that would be the mayor of Bridgeport is considering a run for governor.
That's right.
My mayor. And not only is he considering a run for governor, okay, he wants us to pay for it. He wants to be eligible for public financing. He's filing litigation based upon the constitutional argument. It's a loser, okay? He's done a bad job the second time as mayor of Bridgeport. I would like nothing more than to run against Joe Ganim. It would be an interesting race. And I'm not too worried about
it'd
what
be
the
very
outcome
interesting.
Would be.
It would be interesting indeed. Now, you mentioned the debates, and the debates you're talking about starting next week, I believe the first one is in Windsor, involves Republican Party gubernatorial candidates, those seeking the GOP nomination. Is that correct?
That's correct. And it's individuals who met certain criteria as of September 30, 2017. Specifically, they had to raise a certain amount of money or otherwise have a certain amount of money on hand. And my understanding is about eight people are going to be invited, and we'll see how many of those accept. I think six of the eight have already accepted. I'm clearly going to be there. I love debates. Mm-hmm. They separate the wheat from the chaff. It's the first of what's supposed to be five official GOP gubernatorial debates. We're supposed to have one a month starting December 6th, one in each of the five congressional districts around the state.
Now, this debate tonight, all the gubernatorial candidates were invited down at Yale about legalizing pot, and you chose not to attend. Is that right?
Well, I chose not to attend for several reasons. Number one, I already have a commitment in Hartford tonight, a pre-existing commitment, and I'm not going to cancel that commitment. Secondly, look, I'm happy to answer questions with regard to marijuana, but I'm focused on economic issues. I mean, what do we need to do to turn the state around, to increase economic growth, provide more jobs, you know, put our finances in order? This is an issue that I do not think is a primary issue. I mean, it's frustrating to me. I get questions about it, and the main argument that people are making is we need more revenue. We need more revenue. Look, you know, that may or may not be true, but spending is out of control. And you need to not just consider the revenue aspect, you need to consider public health and safety as well. And it's amazing to me how people don't want to think about those things.
They don't want to talk about it.
They don't. Look, I mean, there are three key questions for me when you think about recreational marijuana. Number one, is it a gateway drug? Number two, can we detect impairment if somebody is driving under the influence because of marijuana, all right? And thirdly, there's compelling medical evidence that says that your brain is not fully developed until you're 25 years old. And so even if you can answer the first two questions satisfactorily, you may not want to allow it until after 25 because you don't want to impair somebody's brain development, because that can end up then resulting in additional public expenditures down the road, if you will. So people need to focus on the public health and safety issues as well as just the revenue issues. I will say this. We do have medical marijuana in this state. A number of people have told me that the definition of there may be too narrow, so we ought to take a look at that. But we need to recognize we got to get spending under control. It's really out of control.
Spending really is your big thing.
Yeah, it's spending. It's rationalizing the size and scope of government.
Years ago.
Right.
Well, then, obviously, in order to get spending under control, you're going to have to sit down with the public employee unions and renegotiate this deal that the governor extended out to 2027. Isn't that correct?
Actually not.
You don't have to sit down.
No, I don't. I'm willing to. Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely willing
to. You, as a governor, make changes.
No, you cannot unilaterally make changes. Very important question, Dan. Here's the issue. The state is a sovereign entity. The benefits under this contract are property rights. The state, as a sovereign entity, can override property rights if it is in the collective best interest of the citizens of this state. If you get a governor, a Senate, and a House that are willing to do so, it will be done. I'm willing to try to talk to the unions about reasonable ways to restructure this. I'm not optimistic that's going to work, and so therefore I am prepared to legislatively override the CBAC agreement, to legislatively eliminate the anti-layoff provision, to restructure employee compensation to where we end up paying more for cash compensation based upon skills, knowledge, and performance, and where we restructure the pension and health care arrangements to make them as good or better than a Fortune 100 company, but where they're affordable and sustainable, and where we actually fund that commitment. We can do it legislatively. Other states can do it. I'm prepared to do it here. And if you don't do that, if you're not prepared to do that, you shouldn't run, and you might as well move, because you can't solve the problem without dealing with this.
Okay, hold those thoughts.
14 minutes.
Hold those thoughts. We'll get right back to 14 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock.
David Walker's going to join us again, Brad, in just a couple of minutes. David, quickly, we've got about 30 seconds during this segment here. Can Connecticut's situation be resolved without resolving this issue with the unions?
No. It is the single most important issue to restore fiscal sustainability and to improve our competitive posture. But we have to be fair. And I'm committed to being fair to employees and retirees.
Okay. That's interesting. And you know, there's only three other states that have the same kind of problem that we have right here. Okay, we'll get back with our very special guest in just a few minutes. It's 10 minutes before 8 o'clock. And it is 7:53, a very special guest, David Walker, the Republican Party gubernatorial, one of them, candidate, and used to be... with the big guys down in Washington, no doubt about that. And how long were you there?
Well, I was in Washington. I had two tours of duty. The last one, I was Comptroller General of the United States, which in English is Auditor General, Chief Performance and Accountability Officer, and CEO of the Government Accountability Office. I did that for 10 years. And then prior to that, I was head of two other federal agencies, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation and the Employee Benefit Security Administration. And I did that for, you know, several years, a number of years. And then I was part-time as a trustee of Social Security and Medicare when I was with Arthur Anderson and ran a worldwide line of business for them, and I did that for 5 years. So I've got over 20 years in the private sector, about 16 in the federal government, 6 years in the not-for-profit sector, and I've been fortunate to lead organizations in all three sectors of the economy.
Well, considering your background, then sort this out for our audience. And it might sound like inside baseball. However, it's how the state of Connecticut runs. State of Connecticut goes out, bonds projects. People invest in the state by buying these bonds. We're taking the money from these bonded projects. We put it into the general fund sometimes to keep day-to-day government going. Now, David, we have a situation where because of the budget crisis, we didn't have a bond commission meeting for 5 months. So now these capital projects that were bonded are running out of money, and the state treasurer is talking about taking money from the general fund to underwrite the cost of these capital programs. In other words, what's going on with all these co-mingling of funds in our state
Unbelievable.
Government?
Hartford's out of touch. Hartford's out of control. Our official name is the Constitution State, but we don't even follow our own Constitution. We haven't had a balanced budget in this state in a number of years. We've raided all the trust funds except for the pension trust fund, and it's poorly funded. When we're short on cash, we go out and bond. And then use that cash to so-called balance the budget. And now you've described some of the consequences of that. Look, you know, we have to right-size government. It's grown too big. It's promised too much. It needs to restructure. And we have to bond only for things that make economic sense. You know, that relates to investments, not consumption. And so those are just a few of the things that we need to do. By the way, we did finally enact a bonding cap and a spending cap, but they're not adequate. There's a big loophole in the spending cap. It doesn't adequately address retirement benefits, and that's the number one problem that we have fiscally. And on the bonding cap, it's not tight enough with regard to the criteria that you have to consider and whether or not you ought to be bonding at all.
So we're still running up the state's credit card and really without understanding the consequences involved with it.
We're mortgaging the future and reducing investments in the future. That is not a prescription for prosperity. Here's the good news. It's not too late to save the ship estate, but 2018 is absolutely critical. You need the right governor who's got the willingness, the ability, and the communication skills to make it happen. And you need a legislature that will support that governor to make these tough transformational changes. If we do that, we will create a better future. If we don't, the giant sucking sound of people leaving the state with increasing frequency will become louder and louder.
Well, and you know, you follow this. Connecticut, in some respects, is a mini Illinois. Illinois is even in worse shape than Connecticut, and they are leaving Illinois at a large rate.
They are. We actually have a declining population. So it's not just people leaving. I mean, you know, birth rates, death rates, migration patterns. We're losing population. There are two things that we're better off than Illinois. Number one, our financial condition is not quite as bad as Illinois. It's bad, but not quite as bad. And secondly, Illinois has a constitutional provision that precludes them from making changes to the state pension and retiree health care plans. They're in a world of hurt. They're going to have a constitutional amendment in order to deal with that issue. We don't have that, and we will address it legislatively if we have.
Why is it? And this four states, why is it that we have to be in these positions? How do certain people get the power to put us in those positions so that we suffer, and that's what we are doing?
Because we haven't had enough transparency and accountability about what's really going on, because people have elected people who are living for today rather than trying to help create a better tomorrow, because we have certain interest groups that have undue power in Hartford, and the number one interest group is the public employee unions. Again, I'm not anti-union, okay, but, you know, we got to tell it like it is, okay, and because we have too many career politicians. I mean, we have too many people that, and frankly, have not had a real job, all right, and they don't know how the economy works.
Should we be a right-to-work state?
I think that's something we should aspire to, yes. I think there are a number of things that we can and should do before that, but yes, I think that's something we should aspire to.
Down the road. Okay.
Coming up to 8 o'clock in the morning, and a very special guest, David Walker, one of the Republican Party gubernatorial candidates, and we will be back with David. Stay with us. David Walker, our guest. The last time you were here, I remember one thing, and that was the mayor of Waterbury, Neil O'Leary, who is, I think he's done a great job over there. He's a real firebrand. Now, and you were going to meet with him. Did that meeting take place?
It did, and it was a great meeting. Neil, as you know, is the mayor of Waterbury, also is a former police chief of Waterbury. Very nice guy. We talked about the numbers. I laid out the numbers. He did not dispute the numbers. He just wanted to make sure that I knew about some of the things they had already done in Waterbury based upon the oversight board that they had had in the past. I was appreciative of hearing that. But the bottom line is they still have a serious problem. Their mill rate is over 60. They still have almost $1 billion in unfunded retiree health care benefits. And one of the things that I told Mayor O'Leary is if I'm the next governor of the state, not only are we going to take steps to be able to turn around Connecticut, we're going to take steps to revitalize the cities. And in order to revitalize the cities, you have to provide a mechanism for them to restructure their finances outside of bankruptcy. And I know that part of this latest budget has something for Hartford, but the question is, does it restructure the retirement benefits? If it doesn't restructure the retirement benefits in a reasonable and sustainable way, you don't solve the problem.
Well, explain to our audience why this is so important, that you have to address this issue of retirement benefits for government employees.
Well, let's just take the state, for example. If you use reasonable assumptions to calculate what the underfunding is, okay, for pensions and health care, $71 billion, okay? It's 70 to 80% of our financial problem, 70 to 80%. You can't treat the disease if you ignore 70 to 80% of the problem. And quite frankly, Bridgeport has got a bigger problem than Hartford does. Waterbury has a significant challenge. Even New Haven has a challenge. You know, there's a $40 million bailout package for Hartford for 1 year. They're supposed to have this oversight board or whatever you call it. But the question is, what power does it have? If you don't treat the disease, you can't create a better future.
You're going to meet with the mayor of Hartford, aren't you?
I am. I've met him twice before. I gave a talk at the Yale Mayor Summit in New York. He and I both spoke at the Connecticut Outlook Forum in Stamford, and I'm going to meet with him within the next 10 days. And I know he's thinking about the possibility of running for governor. He's a very bright and talented guy. Frankly, I think there's a lot more work that needs to be done in Hartford. They need him in Hartford. And again, as I said, if I'm governor, I'm going to provide a mechanism that we're not only going to turn around Connecticut, but we're going to revitalize the cities and get them to restructure their finances so they can be competitive again.
Well, how crucial is that to get our cities in
good shape?
That
is the big question.
Yeah. It's essential. I mean, you know, why is a business going to come to a city that has a mill rate that's totally uncompetitive when you can go 2 miles in any direction and being a different jurisdiction that has a much lower mill rate? I mean, it's just common sense, right? I mean, each city has to have a comparative advantage. Hartford's got, you know, has got the capital, and, you know, pluses and minuses there, but it is the capital, all right? Bridgeport's got a deep water port, okay, but it hasn't done anything with it, okay? New Haven's got Yale, and when you got Yale, you got hope, okay? Waterbury, you know... You know, you'll have to ask Mayor O'Leary what they have. It's a nice town, nice downtown, but, you know, they're challenged.
So the cities are so vital, but do we have to regionalize? Are we too parochial as a state? Well, you mentioned the different mill rates.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely too parochial, okay? And we definitely have to provide incentives and accountability mechanisms to encourage the cities and the towns to move towards a shared services approach, okay? And I think the fact that they're facing fiscal pressures and the state's facing fiscal pressures may end up encouraging them to do that. You know, bad news flows downhill. State's broke. Let's just face it. It's broke, all right? And so, therefore, the cities and the towns have to understand they need to take steps to try to be able to not only make sure their finances are in order, but how can they achieve economy and efficiency? And that's through shared services. We don't need as many school districts as we have, all right, with separate superintendents and administrative functions. We don't need separate payroll, you know, acquisitions, you know, human capital, data processing. Everybody doesn't need to have their own. We need to figure out how we can end up, you know, achieving economies of scale.
You know, I did a program. I'll never forget it because I believe in that.
Yeah.
And I did a program. I wanted to see how the audience felt, and they took me on. I mean, it was like, what are you doing? How could that ever happen here? We've got our own fire departments. We got our own this. We got our own that. It's been that way for years. So how do you break that barrier? That's the big thing.
Look, it's been done in other states. It can be done here. You know, there's only two states in the union that don't have counties. County government, right. I should say. You know, one is Connecticut and the other one is Rhode Island, which is basically a county, right?
Right.
That doesn't mean you need to bring back county government, but you need to figure out mechanisms to achieve economies of scale and efficiency. And now that, you know, for so long, you know, the state could help out, right? But now it's broke, all right? And so the pressure is now going to be felt, you know, greater than ever. And I think that may be enough to get people to start doing some things that they should have done a long time ago.
Okay.
You're smiling, Dan.
Well, yes, because I want to call him the governor.
Yes.
David is singing my tune. This
I know.
Needs to be
I know.
Done,
and mine, too.
Yeah.
And mine, too.
Yeah. I know we've got traffic, and then we'll be back.
20 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. You know, Dan, as we listen here today and to listen to all the candidates that we've had on already, and we're going to have more, there's a lot of work to be done, but I do think it's not going to be that difficult to say which ones are going to be the ones that are going to end up running against each other.
Well, I think you said it. Once the debates start, David, it'll separate the wheat from the chaff.
Absolutely.
So there's no question about that. But I want to get back. Brad brought up an interesting point about regionalism. How do you crack that barrier? We've got here in the state of Connecticut, as you know, right now, the president of the state university system is proposing a consolidation of the 12 community colleges, said it would save taxpayers $28 million, and already there's big pushback on that. So how do you bring about the cuts in government that are needed?
That's the question. Look, humans don't like to change.
No.
And so that's an issue that you have no matter what. I faced that challenge when I was the Comptroller General of the United States, and I had to dramatically restructure the Government Accountability Office. It takes leadership. It takes appropriate transparency and accountability mechanisms. It takes incentives to get people and penalties to do the right thing, and if they don't do the right thing, to hold them accountable for not doing the right thing. When I applied these concepts at the Government Accountability Office, I made it 13% smaller on headcount, one-third less footprint, reduced two-thirds of the different organizational units, eliminated a layer of management, fundamentally changed the structure so that it focused on skills, knowledge, and performance, leveraged technology. And the bottom line is that we were 13% smaller, we were 50 to 100% more productive, and we generated three times the outcome-based results. It isn't rocket science. But if you don't have the right leader, if you don't have the right incentives, transparency, and accountability mechanisms, you won't be successful. I'll get that done.
Now, the unions are out there saying you solve the problem by raising the taxes on the rich. What do you say to that?
We have already proved the Laffer curve, Dr. Arthur Laffer, okay, namely that when you raise taxes to a certain point, revenues actually go down. What people don't understand is that while most people don't want to leave the United States for good reason, they will leave a state and they will leave a locality. And newsflash, they're doing it. And they're going to do it with increasing frequency if we don't recognize reality and make the tough choices that are necessary to create a better future. I'm committed to do that. Politicians won't do it, and people that don't have significant government experience won't know how to do it.
And you're committed, obviously, by also communicating this, because you mentioned the next governor has to have great communication skills, correct?
That's correct. Ronald Reagan is a perfect model there. And what you have to be able to do is you have to be able to go directly to the people and directly to the media with the facts, the truth, the tough choices. You need to lay out a goal. You need to bring people together based upon some principles and values that will bring them together rather than divide them apart. I've done that before on many issues in the past, and I'm prepared to do that here.
Now, why did you choose Connecticut?
Well, 8 years ago, I was CEO of a large foundation in New York City, and I'd been commuting for 2 years between Mount Vernon, Virginia, and New York City, where I had an apartment. And my wife and I just got tired of having a commuting marriage, and we decided we wanted to move up here. We chose Connecticut. We have a beautiful home in the Black Rock section of Bridgeport, right on the water, and we would like to retire there. We would like to retire there, but the only way we can retire there is if these big kinds of changes are made, because the state is millennial unfriendly, retiree unfriendly, and business unfriendly. And I'm prepared to take that on because we'd like to stay here.
Wow.
How does the state appeal to millennials, the largest voting bloc?
Well, it doesn't right now. I mean, the fact is, they want vibrant cities. It doesn't have to be a big city, but it has to be a vibrant city. We've got several cities that are headed for bankruptcy. That are not as vibrant as they need to be. And so we need to target our economic development towards the cities, all right, which will make them more attractive to millennials and to empty nesters, by the way. They want vibrant cities, too, and to businesses. But we also need to provide a mechanism that they can restructure their finances so they can get their mill rates down where they can be competitive, because they're not competitive now.
What about the tax rates?
Well, my view is if you've got a mill rate over 40, you've lost control of your finances.
Absolutely.
All right?
Wow.
And if you have that on top of the huge unfunded retirement obligations, you got to restructure them. Yeah. And you got to do it in a way that's fair, equitable, sustainable. And after you restructure them, you have to make firm commitments to fund so people will actually get what they've been promised. Because right now they've been promised the sun, the moons, and the stars. We can't afford it. We haven't funded it. They're not going to get it.
You know something? You're the first one. First one to say that on this program.
Well, I mean it. I mean it. You won't be disappointed if I'm your next governor.
Now, the Democrats are already out there. I'm talking about state Democrats are already out there running against state Republicans by tying them to President Trump. What do you say to that?
Well, first, with regard to President Trump, he is our president.
I want every president to be successful. We may have our different opinions about who ought to be president, but once they're president, it is in the interest of our country for them to be successful. And people need to understand that. President Trump was not my preferred candidate for the Republican nomination. I contributed funds to a number of other Republican candidates, many of whom I've known for many years. In addition to that, I voted for John Kasich in the primary. But I did vote for President Trump in the general election because I believe he's a change agent. We need change. I don't like his style, but I do believe we need change. Good news is I have great bipartisan appeal. I've been appointed by Reagan, Bush 41, and Clinton. I have strong bipartisan support. I will win. If I'm the Republican nominee, I will win. And the fact is, we need somebody who can work with Washington to try to make sure that we're treated fairly. Because right now, Connecticut is not being treated fairly.
Yeah, we're a state that gives more money than gets back, right?
Well, and we also have elected representatives.
Right.
And we also have elected representatives that are at war with the administration. That didn't help us. That hurts us. Mm-hmm. They may help their own political, you know, career, but it doesn't help this state.
Now, what about, and we're running out of time here, so I want to get this in. What about those, again, local Democrats who are out there trying to tie the local Republicans to the Trump tax package? What are your thoughts on that tax package?
Well, there's, you know, pluses and minuses. I mean, you know, we clearly need pro-growth tax reform. It needs to be simpler, fairer, more competitive. There are positive aspects and negative aspects. You know, I think clearly we need to provide some type of relief or tax deduction for property taxes. Every state has property taxes. Not every state has income taxes. Not every state has sales taxes, if you will. I'm concerned about the fact that the corporate are permanent and the individuals are not permanent. I'm also concerned about what does it do to debt as a percentage of the economy. The truth is both Democrats and Republicans in Washington have been fiscally irresponsible for too many years. 70% of the budget's on autopilot. So do we need pro-growth tax reform? Yes. Does it need to be simpler, fairer, and more competitive? Yes. There are pluses and minuses about this, but we need to start making some tough choices with regard to spending, which we talked about before at the state level. That's what I think.
Do you think that there'll be a tax package out of Congress before the end of the year?
It's hard for me to believe that they'll be able to reconcile their differences between the Senate and the House and get it all passed before the end of the year. I think they'll ultimately pass something. And the real question is that when are we going to get on to the rest of the work that needs to be done?
Right.
David Walker, one of the Republican Party gubernatorial candidates.
And the first GOP debate is on December 6th again in Windsor?
In Windsor. I think the high school in Windsor.
Okay.
Right.
Terrific.
Hey, great to have you here.
Great to be back. Hope to come back again.
Oh, we'll have you back again.
You'll be back.
I'm just amazed at anybody running for office. Where do you get the energy to run is what I want to know.
Well, I'm fortunate. I have very high energy. Yeah. And I just had a physical checkup yesterday. They told me that I'm 25 to 30 years younger than my chronological age as far as, you know, my energy level and my brain functions and all that.
You're going to need it.
at least I got that going for me.
You're going to need more than that.
Yeah, right.
Hey, thanks a million.
Yeah, Dave, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you.